NFR.
NFR Extra is a podcast dedicated to the Wrangler National Finals Rodeo and features icons and personalities that embody the Western lifestyle.
No matter if you're a time defender or a rough stock guy, when you show up, I want you to have a chance to win. I don't want it to be a drawing contest. You know, anybody that comes has a chance to win. And the second one is if you're a spectator and you come to the first performance, you're wanting to go back and buy a ticket and come back the next night. You know, any time that you're raising a horse at first, you're throwing darts, it can be the best mare in the world, but she might not be a producer.
He'd probably kill me if I told this story, but I'm going to tell it anyway.
I love it.
This is pro rodeo announcer Andy Seiler, and you are listening to NFR Extra. We are joined today by Heath Stewart of Frontier Rodeo, and they've built up quite a legacy, and I'm interested to hear some of the insight because they've diversified their operation too. It's not just bucking horses. So, Heath, we appreciate you carving out some time to have a conversation with us today.
Thank you guys for having me on.
So take us back to how you and Jerry got together, because I know we've worked together over the years, but I don't know that I've ever heard that story as to how you guys came together.
So back in 98, 99, Jerry used to do a lot of bull riding, and at the time he was partners with a guy named Dan Mundorf, and I lived right here by Dan and helped Dan some. And Jerry was shorthanded, and I used to go to the rodeos with Dan, and he asked me, he said, would you be interested in going to a few bull rides for me? And I said, sure. And so when I did that, I've been with him ever since.
Did he have some horses? Because I know he's been deep in the bull business for a long time, but did he have some horses around?
Yes, sir. He had some horses. Him and Dan had some horses together. And at the time it was called Salt River Rodeo Company. It was Jerry, Dan Mundorf, and a guy from Arizona named Skip Beeler. And they owned it. And everybody kind of had some stock in it, you know, and everything. And it just seemed like there was a lot of people involved. And so Dan went out, and so Jerry says, I think it's time for us to go on our own too. And so he calls up to the office and buys a card, and that was the Frontier Rodeo card. Skip Beeler bought the Salt River and then eventually sold it to Jerry Dornkamp. So the Frontier Rodeo card, I mean, we started with pretty much zero. It was just a card bought out of the office, and we had one rodeo in Arcadia, Florida, and then we had to put on some rodeos to make it eligible, and then we just started, you know, buying horses, and we had the mares already. And just kept breeding the mares, you know, raising horses and breeding them and buying horses along the way. You know, Jerry always had the bulls, but we had one truck and a pickup and gooseneck, and we just started, and, you know, eventually we got another rodeo and another rodeo and another rodeo, and it's come along pretty good, I guess.
Knock on wood. I guess so.
Kind of the background of it.
Going into that deal and having the mares, what did the foundation of the bucking horse program look like, or what were you looking for as far as prospects in developing your bucking horse program?
Well, you know, back in the day, Jerry went to Harry Vold's sale, and we got 10 mares out of there. And that's what it was based on, was those 10 mares. There was one mare in particular, Dusty Gal. He was the mom to Bobby Joe Skoll, Dusty Dan, Joe Finn, a bunch of horses like that. and we got one stud colt out of her. And then, oh, I think when she folded, she lived for about three more weeks, and then she passed on. And we raised that horse up, and his number was 59 or 03, Big Medicine. Mm-hmm. And that become our foundation stud there. And that's majority of what our horses go back to and what he is. Horse Medicine Woman was out of him, Maple Leaf, and also Gunfire, horses of the year that we raised that were out of him.
Now, is he still around, Heath, or what time frame is that?
Nope, he died. He died, what, two years ago? Maybe three years ago.
Okay.
So he passed on.
So what was it about that, like, about that horse that made him so spectacular? Because that's kind of you obviously had to put a lot of time into him when the mare passes like that. So, I mean, was that just a hands-on sort of thing? And then he just was spectacular past that? Or there had to have been something that you guys had to have seen that made him pretty special?
Well, Harry always told us that was probably one of the best mares that he ever raised. And he said, you know, if you ever get a stud colt out of it, keep it. And Harry, to me, I think he was probably the sharpest person about bucking horses there ever was. And so that's what we did. You know, we took his advice on it and ran with it.
Is that process early on, Heath? Are you kind of throwing darts, or are there certain things that you're looking at, you know, as far as activity and how they're acting at a young age? Because, I mean, we do have some listeners to our podcast that may be brand new to rodeo, so they may not understand that you guys aren't hauling these horses down the road to a bunch of rodeos till they're 5 or 6 years old. So you've got 60 months of feeding and trying to figure all this out.
So, you know, any time that you're raising a horse at first, you're throwing darts. It can be the best mare in the world, but she might not be a producer.
Right.
You know, and on your first few, you know, until you figure out that she's a producer, it's definitely throwing darts. Because like you said, Andy, we never buck them until they're 4 years old. And then you just put a few trips on them and we turn them back out. And then we start bucking them more when they're fives. And then we put them on the truck when they're six. So you got a lot of time, feed, effort, you know, keeping them around. So it's definitely throwing darts at first. And then once you get a producer, then you can, you know, roll on with them.
How do you differentiate what horse is going in what event? Like, I mean, you buck them at four and dummy bucking them, I presume, and then, you know, maybe five, they're starting to get some live riders on them. But what are you looking for as far as going, you know, this is going to be a good bareback horse or this is going to be a saddle bronc horse?
You know, there's several things. And like I said, after you learn the mare and the stud, you kind of know what they're going to make. At first, kind of my theory of it is the more wilder type horses I try to put in the bareback for a little bit. The horses that kind of put their head down that are just got a real nice pattern, I try to put those in the bronc riding. It seems like they take it, you know, better. All horses doesn't take the bronc riding. You know, a lot of horses, you put a halter on them and a guy pulls on their head, they go to whirling, spinning. They don't take the halter. So it takes a horse that can take the halter. But like I said, the more mature horses, to me, make better broncs. And then, you know, they can kind of get their wild stuff out in the bareback riding. The big, strong horses anymore, you know, the guys don't like getting on them in the barebacks. They get sore up on them and they yank on them. So that's the kind, you know, hopefully they take the halter so you can get them bucked in the bronc riding.
All right. I need to hear a "we didn't breed this horse" story, because I know you guys have had some bucking horses that didn't come from your breeding program. So I want to hear your best, "hey, we've got this horse that keeps bucking everybody off. Will you take him to the rodeo and try him out?"
I mean, we've been in that boat several times, you know, but, and there's been some guys that's really gotten along really good with some saddle horses before, but we've never really have gotten one to perform. So I don't usually mess with those too much. Probably there used to be a boy named Matt Williams, and he had a set of mares, and we always gave him studs, and then we got a couple horses every year from him. And so he was putting on high school rodeos in Kansas, and there was a horse called Let Her Rip and Wild Bill, and they were just cow killing the kids at the high school rodeos. So he told me, he said, "You better take these two, or I'm going to get run out of Kansas." So, and they went to the finals, shoot, probably 10, 12 times a piece with NFR.
Yeah, I don't know that I'd want that one at the high school rodeo.
Oh, no, sir. I wouldn't either. Not just starting out.
Now, wait, didn't you had a horse called Can Chaser, too? Wasn't that a barrel horse?
Yeah, that one was. But actually, Bart Futrell from North Carolina put on some rodeos and stuff, and it was a barrel horse, and he started bucking it, and it bucked, and I bought it from him.
Okay.
Because Justin Rumford, when we were at Corpus, he did this horse. I mean, he was gentle. You could put haltering, saddling, whatever, but when he got on his back, he did buck. And so Justin had to take the tacos out in the arena on a horse. So we went and got him out of the pen and saddled him, because he would just run back there and jump on a horse and go. And we had him saddled and ready. And Justin was getting ready to get on him and seen the brand, said, "Nope, not today, boys."
Oh, big tree fall hard. Yeah.
Couldn't happen to a better guy.
Are there instances where you have some that are born to buck that you do end up saddling and using as a pickup horse or any of those ride out horses there on the ranch?
Well, I mean, we have one or two, and anybody that tells you that every horse that they raise is a bucking horse, they're lying, because it's not. But there is some that, you know, don't make it, of course, but we have broke a few. But there's too many great saddle horses around, good saddle horses, to mess with one of them in my eyes.
Right.
Some people, I mean, they love, you know. And we have had two or three of them, and they've been really good horses, don't get me wrong. But the time and effort that you put into them and everything, it's just better to raise one that you know that's made to make a riding horse.
Right. That'd be like that. I'm probably shooting over the bow on this one, but like the movie Me, Myself, and Irene, to where like all of a sudden, you know, got this nice little saddle horse and its genetics kick in, and then it just snaps and here comes Hank, and it's like, oh, never mind. Like, I'm on board with you too. Like, there's too many, they make too many damn good saddle horses to freaking try this Powerball reject and see what happens there.
Yes, sir. I agree with you 100%.
Let's take a quick pause and we'll be right back. The journey is long and difficult. The goal is a PRCA gold buckle. The stage is the Thomas and Mack Center. The backdrop is Las Vegas. The NFR experience is 10 days of the best cowboys and barrel racers combined with a 24/7 party. The biggest stage, the brightest lights, and all are invited. The December tradition, the Wrangler National Finals Rodeo.
So, changing gears from bucking horses, what's going on with the saddle horse program you got?
Well, I mean, we kind of just started out as just a little hobby. We got a couple saddle horse mares and just playing with it, you know, as a hobby. And then before you know it, you know, we got 15 of them. And so the more we got them, you know, like me and Jerry was talking, we might as well try to buy. We always had some really good ones, and then after we got them and sold a few and sent some off to get rode, and they seemed to be going pretty good. And so So we went out and bought a few really what I call a lot better mares. We just tried to upgrade it a little bit. We bred some. We breed them every year to really good studs. We got some out of Teton Ridges, Smooth Talking Style. The Third Edge, we just had one then. There's a really hot horse called Dual Reyish. We got some on the ground out of him, Stevie Ray. So it's just like I said, we're just kind of getting into it, you know, but we want to develop it just like we did our bucking horses. We want to take it to another level and raise some really good ones and sell them as performance horses. And if one don't make it in the cutting world or something, you know, then we'll make rope horses out of it and things like that. So, like I said, it was a hobby, but it's starting to kind of turn into a little more work than a hobby now.
Well, with as much as you guys have going on, Heath, who's helping you with that? I mean, because, you know, with all the events you guys go to in the summertime, who's kind of riding some of those horses for you and helping you weed through them?
So we send a lot of horses to Cody Oil. He rides some. Brent Lewis has had some. There's a boy named Travis Sheets that lives out and takes care of a bunch of yearlings. He kind of gets them all going for us pretty good. And then we ride them here at the ranch, you know, when they're young and get them going. And Ty Atchison, he's rode a bunch of them. But we keep them on the ranch. We have about 500 head of commercial cows, and the boy that takes care of them for us is named Preston. So he keeps two or three there with him. We take them on the road, use them in the slacks and everything. My wife, she's going to start taking care of the saddle horses. We're building a saddle horse barn, a bigger barn right now as we speak, to keep them all out and everything. And so that's where we're trying to walk to. And we're trying to raise some, you know, that we can sell as just yearlings, where we don't even have to mess with them. We'll just take them to a sale and sell them as yearlings.
Tell us a little bit about what the ranch is. How big is it? You just mentioned you have 500 head just on the cattle side.
We have a little over 10,000 acres now. And we have some rent ground also. We put in about 1,000 acres of wheat. And the wheat that we put in, we put it in for grazing. We graze all of our animals on it. We don't cut any of it for grain. We have about 100 acres of alfalfa, and we're getting ready to plant about another 100 acres of that. We put up hay. We put up grass hay also. So that's the ranch. And then what we do is we wean. We have a bunch of Hereford cows, and we put Bremer bulls on them and raise what they call a F1 tiger stripe. And then we put Angus bulls on those F1 tiger stripe heifers, and then we sell the heifers. So that's nice. Our main cow herd is selling the F1 tiger stripe heifers.
That's
your wheelhouse there, buddy.
No, come I know. On. I was just thinking. So you got a half quarter on that deal for your heifers going on that side. So you got the loose hide, you got the maternal, and you got the carcass. So you got literally on your heifer side, you've got pretty much every aspect of bovine that you would want for running in that country. I was processing the whole thing.
I could see the wheels turning, but I'm like, all right,
I was trying to figure it out. So that'd be correct, right, Heath? So
yes. And then we take them to a guy named Tom Johnson, Johnson Cattle Company.
Okay.
He has two or three sales every year down around Corsicana, Texas, and that's where we take all of our heifers to and put them in his sale. He has those special cow sales every year, I think he has three or four of them a year, and we go to about two of them a year.
Yeah. That's so them cattle, like in that country where you're at too, they got to be able to travel quite a bit, right? They got to be pretty rugged, or is it? I mean, I've never been down in that neck of the woods as far as the producing side of it. So, I mean, they got to be
pretty
rugged cattle.
Yes, sir, they have to be, but I mean, it's still nothing like, you know, Arizona or New Mexico, anything like that. But
right,
the F1s, you know, I mean, they sell really good in Texas. A lot of people have them down there. They last forever. They raise great calves. So that's how we got into it. Some guys that we knew had them, and we had bought a little load of Tiger Stripe cows, and they did so well, then that's why we started raising them.
Right. And then, so you got most of your cow herd then, they got Tiger Stripe in them, or are they gonna be hurt on the Hereford breed?
Most of the ones that we keep are Herefords. Now, we do have right. a few Bramers too. And then what we do is we run the Hereford cows, put the Bramer bulls on them.
Right.
To get our
F1 out of that deal.
Yeah, so we do have a few Bramers and then put the Hereford bulls on them also.
Huh. Yeah, that's pretty interesting. That's where, like in our country up here in Montana, it's, I mean, if it's not straight black-hided, it's getting dock points right away. And then you go to other parts of the country and it's like, man, you run a straight black one here, they're going to fall apart and melt. So it's just interesting to hear the different geographics of what these cattle are successful at.
Yes, sir. Like if you was to try to sell them in your country, they would, like you say, chop your head off.
Yeah. Or I mean,
they just freeze. Their
ears would freeze plumb off. Yeah. There's.
Yes.
So, which, yeah. you know, so no, that's, it's very interesting. So, and so on that side too, so you got the working ranch performance horse, cutting horse, kind of got the cow horse side of all of that going on there. And then is your primary mark on these horses? Are you going for like just a general performance horse, or are you going for discipline specific?
No, I mean, you know, we want to raise cutting horses and sell them straight to the cutters.
Right.
And then we also just have a few mares that we raise specifically just for rope horses or rodeo horses. You know, when you go to some of your rodeos, you got to take, you know, you might have 12, 15 head of horses there, saddle horses, for the committees to ride in the parades, for the queens to ride, for the openings and things like that. And, you know how it is trying to find horses that you can depend on. So
right.
yep. that's another thing, you know, if we raise them and then we know what we have. So when we take it to town, we know what we got instead of going buying one and taking it and it bucked the queen off or,
right.
you know, run off through the parade. So it's just, you kind of know what you got when you're going to town that way. So that's another thing that yeah. we like them.
Yeah. Madam Mayor, throw a leg over this one. We're going to hope it's all right. First trip to town. See how it goes.
Because I've been there. I've seen a lot of queens get bucked off and pretty good wreck. So yeah, I try to veer away from those deals.
My favorite line whenever I'm announcing horseback and using somebody else's horse is when they say, go to him. I'm like, no. My go to him days are over. Okay. With all due respect, I'll go to taking the trash out because my wife doesn't want to do it, but I'm not going to a horse that could kill me. No, those days are over for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll go to the vet trailer and get some rompum.
At a rodeo, it takes a well broke horse yes. for a guy to announce on.
Yes. Absolutely.
Or, you know, even queens, because, you know, you got pyro, you got flags waving, just the crowd beating on the bleachers and things like that. Perfect example, boy, Pohamus buys this horse. He brings him to Cody. And he'd probably kill me if I told this story, but I'm going to tell it anyway.
He bought
this horse. And he was a really good horse. Boy, he is proud of this horse. And told me, you know, because Boyd's always had great horses.
Yes, he has.
And so there's a little guy named Larry that always does the firecrackers, the pyro and everything. And when Larry sets off his pyro, it sounds like they're having World War III out there. So when he sets it off, Boyd's horse went berserk. I mean, it went nuts. And he couldn't ride it for the rest of the rodeo. I mean, it just couldn't handle it.
Yeah.
And so he had to go tie him up and get on the flag horse, you know, and he had to announce on his feet for just a little bit. And then we got the flag horse for him. He got on him. But, you know, it's just one of them deals. Before he got there, you know, Boyd wouldn't have brought him if he didn't think he was going to work. And outside the arena, you know, he rode great, was a great horse, but just the crowd and the fireworks and all that, you know, he just lost his marbles.
Well, it's a helpless feeling too, because I mean, Steve and I, we do Belfouche together, and we had three great performances. And then the fourth performance, a guy parachutes in with an American flag, and this horse sees it, and he was done. Like, I mean, we survived the performance, but you never know what it is that can set one off just because it's different and it makes them uncomfortable.
Yes. And you can imagine Boyd was in a great mood too when all
this was going on. Oh, I can only imagine his temperature. Yeah. Oh. Well, Heath, the other thing that I want to bring up, because with all the things you have going on, I'm not trying to butter you up when I say this, but your crew speaks very highly of what you guys do. So I want to dip a little bit into your business philosophy, because when you talk to your guys, even when they're tired and they've had a long day, like, I can't find people to really say anything bad about you guys. And I just want to know what your business philosophy is to be able to keep the crew that you have melded together.
Well, I mean, first of all, I will say, and I'm a little biased, but I think we have the best crew there is. We got a hell of a set of group of guys. And, you know, and ladies also. So, you know, I mean, one thing, we take good care of them. I mean, you know, we try to pay them good. But when it's time to roll, you know, they got to roll. But yeah. When we do see a little break, you know, we try to, you know, if we got an opportunity to let them rest, you know, let them rest. Don't just go look for something for them to do.
Yeah.
But they're a great set of guys, and they're not afraid to work. And when it's time to go, it's, you know, it's go time, and they know it. They've been with us for a long time. And then even the people that we hire, you know, if you surround yourself with good people, it makes you look a lot better too. So
that's a good philosophy.
So it and even when we hire people, just announcers, clowns, bullfighters, and production people and stuff like that. I mean, if you start off with the best, you know, I mean, it's, you're just that far ahead. So it, the crew, our crew and the people that go with us, you know, I mean, they're the ones that make Frontier Rodeo really stand out and help us out to where we are now because of a great crew.
All right, selfishly, I've got one more question. Do you want to see somebody win the round on your horse, or do you want to buck somebody off when you're the flank man?
A little of both. I love seeing people be in the high 80s or the 90s. You know, I mean, I do. I love it. But then on another hand, when you raise this animal, and you've watched him grow up for 4 years, 5, 6 years, and he goes out there and bucks off Casey Field or Stetson Wright, you know, you also kind of get a grin on your face too. And those people are my friends, don't get me wrong, best there is. But it dang sure makes you smile that you raised something that good that could buck a person like that off. But there's kind of two things that I keep in my mind on how I want our rodeos to go. No matter if you're a kind of in or a rough stock guy, when you show up, I want you to have a chance to win. I don't want it to be a drawing contest. You know, anybody that comes has a chance to win. And the second one is if you're a spectator and you come to the first performance, you're wanting to go back and buy a ticket and come back the next night.
Well. So,
there's a lot to be said with that. I can't end this conversation without bringing up Medicine Woman. I want you to talk a little bit about this horse, because 2010 was the first time that it is noted the saddle bronc horse of the national finals, and she continues to be 2022 Hall of Fame inductee. Talk a little bit about that horse's career.
So Medicine Woman, Robert Etbeyer, he's the coach out here at Goodwill, and it's about 2 hours from our house. And that's where we take majority of our colts is out to his college in Buckham for the first time and everything. And we also have an arena here. We do schools and stuff here also. But the first time that we bucked her, you know, the first time or two when you buck some horses, you say, well, maybe, yeah, maybe. But the first time that we bucked her, she looked special. And, I mean, by far, and nowhere's even close, she's been the best thing that we've ever raised. But she went, the first time that she went to the finals was actually in the bareback riding. But, I mean, from the first day that we bucked her, from there on, I mean, she was outstanding every single time that we bucked her. And she hurt Will Lowe at the NFR. She yanked on him so hard, or something up in his shoulder, like a nerve or something. And after that, you know, I put her in the bronc riding. The first place I took her to was at San Antonio in the bronc riding. And somebody said, you're going to put her at San Antonio in the bronc riding for the first time? And I said, yeah, I think she's fine. And she never came out of it after that. And she went on, you know, like you said, to win 4 world titles and then go into the Hall of Fame. I mean, she is quite the honor for us to be able to call her ours.
What was her temperament like in the back pens?
Oh, she was easy going. I mean, just you could walk up to her, pet her. She was easy minded, smart. Never got in a hurry, never, you know, ran around to cripple herself or anything like that. You know, she was very smart, like I say, very gentle. So she took really good care of herself.
Has she given you any colts or fillies?
We got, we got 2 stud colts out of her that we kept studs. And I haven't even bucked one of them yet, but I have bred both of them, 2 mares and everything. So she kind of reminds you of old Hambone, easy keeper and just kind of eases around.
Complains quite a bit, she does, yeah.
But no, yeah. She didn't just complain, and she just, like I said, she is an easy keeper, easy to be around, and like I said, if you drawed her, you really good chance you could win first on her.
Well, Heath, this has been a blast hanging out with you, and we really appreciate you carving out the time, because we know going into spring and once May hits, you'll be wide open. But we thank you for stopping by and hanging out with us here on the NFR Extra.
Well, thank you guys for giving us the opportunity, and we really appreciate it.
Want to experience more of the NFR? Then visit nfrexperience.com. And we invite you to subscribe to NFR Extra on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and wherever you're listening right now. If you like what you've heard on NFR Extra, we would love it if you gave us a 5-star rating and tell your friends how to subscribe.